then we get educated on rate regulation.
Briefly. Briefly.
Good afternoon, everybody. I'd like to start with an apology, is that because you have been so speedy through the previous session, Neil, who was going to lead this session, isn't actually in the office at the moment. He's not been able to get back fast enough. So please bear with me. I'll try and start this education session as best I can, and then hopefully Neil will arrive and pick up the pieces that I have left off.
He doesn't know which pieces you left off.
We'll catch him up quickly. The paper that we're looking at is paper 9F, which is the US GAAP comparison, which consists of a slide deck. And if it's okay with people, I think the most effective way would be if I could just go through the slide deck and just add a little bit of flavour to some of the points. I'm not going to go through every point, but just add a little flavour in places and then take questions at the end, I think would help get us through. So starting at slide two. As it highlights there are currently people who are companies that are preparing IFRS financial statements using IFRS 14, our temporary standard, and many of those people have come from a US GAAP background or a local GAAP that has been based on US GAAP. So the purpose of this session is to just try and highlight some of the key differences that we've identified between US GAAP and the proposals that we will be discussing tomorrow in our session for the model that we've been developing, not to provide you with a detailed education on US GAAP, but just as part of our effects analysis so that you're aware that the package of proposals that we've got for our model, where they differ from IFRS, that's where people are going to have the biggest changes to deal with. If they transition from one model to the other. So that's the main purpose of this session. Moving to slide four, looking at the overall model and the overall approach, highlighting here that both of them are trying to reflect the economics of the environment that they're in, but we do have two quite different approaches. So the model that we've been developing for IFRS purposes is designed very much as a supplement to other IFRS standards. So those standards would apply first, and then the model that we're looking at would look at incremental rights and incremental obligations, supplementing the information that's already there, in particular supplementing IFRS 15. In comparison, US GAAP is more of a hybrid approach in that a lot of the basis for the recognition is a cost deferral type approach where the regulation will allow companies to charge through the rate in the future amounts of costs that have been incurred, and it's those incurred costs that are then deferred as regulatory assets on the balance sheet. In some places as well, US GAAP has an override of other standards, in particular around property, plant and equipment, where if the regulator accepts certain amounts to be recognised as PP&E for regulatory purposes, the US GAAP model would allow those regulatory numbers to be used instead of the normal US GAAP numbers for PP&E. In terms of the scope, the IFRS model that we've been developing is focusing on the type of defined rate regulation where we've been talking about the regulation identifying a total allowed compensation, and our regulatory assets and regulatory liabilities focusing on the difference between the total allowed compensation for goods and services supplied compared to the amount that's been included in the rate charged to customers, and we would have a catch-up that we would recognise as a regulatory asset or a regulatory liability. And it's that focus on the type of regulation that's within our scope. For US GAAP, the scope is expressed in quite a different way. First of all, it's looking at the regulation is a type where the rates must be designed to recover the costs that have been incurred by the company. So again, it links in to the cost deferral model, which is very much linked to the nature of the regulation that was in the US, particularly at the time the US standard was issued. That type of regulation is still very much in play in the US, but one thing that has changed slightly is that there are some additional requirements now that do focus on the compensation the regulation is allowing. So it's not a pure cost deferral model. It is looking at supplementing some of the revenue information as well. The other part of the scope is looking at a focus on the ability to recover the costs. So looking at, is the rate set in a way that you would expect that it would recover those costs that are being deferred? Again, we're not explicit in the proposals that we've got for the scope, because we're looking at recovery when we get into recognition and measurement more so than the initial scope. But that said, within our scope, the nature of the regulation is intended to capture this sort of idea that the rate would be set to allow those amounts to come through. Neil has just arrived. I'm just going to double check with him. Are you okay to pick up starting at slide 6 on the recognition?
Yep, certainly. Yep?
Okay,
yeah,
thank you.
So at the recognition level, we have a few further distinctions between the two models. In the proposed IFRS model, where existence is uncertain, we propose recognizing a regulatory asset or a regulatory liability where it is more likely than not that the right or obligation exists. U.S. GAAP goes a step further in recognizing only where it is probable that an entity will be able to recover through that amount through the rates. Probable in U.S. GAAP is defined as likely, which in practice is taken to mean a higher threshold than more likely than not, which is the threshold decided on for the IFRS model. And probable of recovery also goes a step further than the IFRS model, where we're proposing to consider only existence at the existence of the right or obligation at the recognition step. U.S. GAAP primarily focuses on the capitalization or deferral of incurred costs, where incurred costs are those arising from cash paid out or an obligation to settle an amount in cash. One further difference at the recognition step is that under U.S. GAAP, if a regulator permits an entity to amortize goodwill that it has recorded in the acquisition of a business, then U.S. GAAP would also permit that entity to record that goodwill as a regulatory asset and also amortize the regulatory asset over the period of the amortization of the goodwill through the rates. And that's a difference to the IFRS model, where we would not record that amount. Moving on to the next slide, some of the exceptions that U.S. GAAP gives to the incurred costs criteria. As I mentioned before, it's primarily a cost deferral model, but it does present some exceptions. One of the most notable of these is where a regulator permits an entity to capitalize an amount during construction to compensate it for the cost of capital that's been tied up in construction, commonly referred to as an allowance for funds used during construction. U.S. GAAP would permit the entity to capitalize that amount into the carrying value of the associated item of plant, utility plant. This would be a difference to the IFRS model, where we would only record the amounts that we would normally capitalize applying IAS 16 and IAS 23. So we would not capitalize that additional equity amount that we would capitalize applying U.S. GAAP. Another notable exception is for alternative revenue programs. So these are broadly delineated into two types, the first type being to compensate and make the entity whole for any variances it might experience So variances in demand or weather or other external factors that are commonly referred to as type A programs. And there's also type B programs, which are classified as your incentive type programs. So US GAAP provides the scope for recognition of certain regulatory assets related to these amounts, but the criteria for doing so are somewhat restrictive, whereas under the IFRS model, we would see these amounts as forming part of the total allowed compensation that an entity becomes entitled to, and they would be more of an integral part of the model rather than an exception as they are under US GAAP. One of the last key differences is US GAAP provides specific guidance for sales within a group, so particularly from an unregulated member of the group to a regulated member. If the regulator accepts that higher amount, the amount of the transfer price, then US GAAP would require that the entity not eliminate that gain on consolidation, but to keep the item of plant or the service at the higher amount. Whereas under the proposed IFRS model, that markup would merely be recognized over time as the related item was used in the delivery of the service. Moving on to measurement. So under the IFRS model, as we've gone through in previous meetings, an entity would make an estimate of future cash flows arising from a regulatory asset or regulatory liability and would discount those estimated cash flows using the rate of interest or return provided by the regulatory agreement, which we anticipate would, in most cases, be an adequate rate to use. In limited circumstances where the rate was determined to be inadequate, an entity would establish a minimum adequate rate and use that for initial and subsequent measurement. An entity would also update its estimate of any cash flows arising from a regulatory asset or liability at each reporting period and would leave the discount rate as initially determined unless that rate, the applicable rate in the regulatory agreement was also changed, then it would also update the discount rate. Under U.S. GAAP, in the vast majority of scenarios, however, there is no discounting. The model focuses more on the deferral or capitalization of amounts. It does provide specific guidance for discounting in certain limited scenarios, such as where an entity is subject to an implicit disallowance of a return. So that may be where it's provided with a low or no return for an extended period of time on a base, or in certain other scenarios, most commonly the abandonment of an item of plant where an entity may not recover its full investment in that asset. US GAAP would prescribe the particular discount rate to use based on the situation. The outcome would not necessarily be that much different than the IFRS model, where we would also recognize any write-down immediately arising from, for example, a decision to abandon a plant, but we would not prescribe the discount rate in the same level of detail as US GAAP. We would specify that, similar to the principle outlined earlier, an entity would establish the minimum adequate rate to compensate it and use that as a discount rate if that was lower than the rate being provided by the regulatory agreement. One further difference relates to phase-in plans, as they're known under US GAAP, and these are plans where an entity does not permit, or sorry, a regulator does not permit an entity to charge depreciation of an item of utility plant through the rates at the same rate as the economic depreciation of the asset. So the depreciation it would have recorded applying accounting standards applicable to entities more generally. So it's delaying the recovery of that item of plant. In these situations, US GAAP prohibits the recognition of a regulatory asset for that timing difference. And that's a difference from our model as well, where if there was the ability to recover that amount in the rates charged in the future, we would recognize that amount in our model. Moving on to slide 9, some other items. One One item we would recognize as part of the core principles of the IFRS model would be any bonuses or penalties that an entity becomes entitled to. As we've mentioned many times now, in the IFRS model, we focus on the total allowed compensation that an entity becomes entitled to as a result of goods or services supplied during a period. And that would encompass any bonuses or penalties that it becomes entitled to in the supply of those goods or services, and those would be recognized when they were earned or incurred. This is somewhat similar to those Type B alternative revenue programs under U.S. GAAP that we mentioned earlier, but in the IFRS model, it forms more part of the general principle rather than a specific exception. U.S. GAAP provides some specific guidance around the discontinuation and reapplication of regulatory accounting. Now, this wouldn't necessarily be a difference to our model, but it is something that we do not plan to set out as explicitly as they do. However, the basic principle is that in discontinuation, an entity would eliminate all recorded regulatory assets and liabilities to the extent it can identify them, essentially. So for some items that have been recorded as part of plant and inventory, it may not be possible to clearly identify those amounts, and they would not necessarily be written off. The U.S. GAAP provides a list of items that are required to be written off and that are not, whereas under the IFRS model, if for whatever reason the regulation ceased and we no longer had the ability to recover those amounts through the rates, we would update our estimate of cash flows and recognize the write-off in that manner. One further difference the staff have noted is in respect of pensions. So U.S. GAAP focuses much more closely on the amounts recognized under ASC 715 in determining whether to recognize a regulatory asset or liability, and sets out very prescriptive criteria as to whether an entity should record a regulatory asset or liability, whereas, again, in our model, we're attempting to take a more principles-based approach and recognize the right or the obligation that an entity becomes entitled to in future. We also anticipate we'd reach relatively similar outcomes for decommissioning and environmental liabilities under both models, and also for advanced billings where there may be a regulatory asset recognized. Moving on to the presentation disclosure slide. As mentioned previously, the IFRS model is a supplementary model. We're primarily supplementing IFRS 15 revenue from contracts with customers, and this is really reflected in the proposed presentation requirements as well. So balances that are reported already using existing IFRS standards are not altered. And then we'd present a supplementary line, regulatory income or expense, as a separate line immediately below revenue, reflecting that fact. Under U.S. GAAP, on the other hand, generally speaking, the presentation is on a net basis, so netting the applicable credit to the income statement off of the associated expense. This also goes for OCI, so where the underlying item affects OCI, the netting would also be in the statement of OCI. In certain instances, U.S. GAAP will also adjust revenue in certain situations, particularly where regulatory liabilities arise as a result of revenues that may be subject to refund or advance billings made on construction, for example. Generally speaking, as well, U.S. GAAP has limited explicit disclosure requirements in the standard. Much of the current disclosure practice, as we understand it, has evolved through application of the standard over time. Whereas under the IFRS model, we are proposing some more specific disclosure requirements in certain regards. And that takes us through the presentation.
What was the reason why we have a lower threshold for recognition than US GAAP?
We talked previously about having the higher, and again before Neil joined the organisation, we did talk about the possibility of having a higher threshold to recognise and regulate the assets rather than liabilities. But in the process of the conceptual framework discussions, we felt that a symmetrical model was more appropriate because the regulator is looking at them pretty much in the same way. And we are focused more on the more likely than not, just being more precise words than probable, because, as Neil highlighted, some people interpret probable as being a higher threshold rather than the greater than 50% more likely.
Well, it
than
is.
Not.
Yeah, I wouldn't say 51% is probable.
Well, IS 37, in some of our standards, it is used slightly differently.
Okay. Daryl.
Thanks for the presentation. The impression you get as you're presenting it is that this is a standard in the US context which is very specific to US GAAP and to the US regulatory process. Initially, when I read this, I wondered how it was being applied in the IFRS space, but it's, if I understand correctly, and I just want to confirm this, because it is IFRS 14, essentially you do what amounts to a US GAAP balance sheet, and then the difference between the US GAAP balance sheet and the IFRS balance sheet becomes the regulatory difference.
So on day one, on transition into IFRS 14, there is it's an IFRS 1 first time adopters exemption where if you have got some of these regulatory amounts showing up in PP&E, that effectively freezes on your transition into IFRS 14, but any further timing differences would then flow through as the separate regulatory deferral account balance under IFRS 14. And the reason for that IFRS 1 exemption on first time adoption is once those regulatory numbers have been accepted, many people don't track them through, so it wasn't practical to be able to go and reverse out all of those regulatory changes.
Hans, could I add just something to Jane's response on that, which is my recollection of the work that you've done identifying practice today is that in many countries they have an approach that in some cases is asserted as being an application of U.S. GAAP, but in other cases it's developed in a policy an approach or a national GAAP that is based on but is not directly but is not U.S. GAAP. So it isn't like everybody who's doing something based on U.S. GAAP is doing exactly what's here. This is just a good indication of where people might be starting from.
I think that might help answer, because it felt very specific to the environment and the context in which it operates. But that then means that it's been adapted for the context, for these other contexts and environments.
Yeah.
And regulatory models.
Anne?
Thanks for the presentation, Neil. Following up on the previous two comments, I suppose I'd be interested in knowing how many people are following something that's very like US GAAP, or some people, how many have got something that's modified. And I think about that because if I assumed people were following closely on US GAAP and then they were going to transition into the new model, I would think that they've got issues around a whole... The concepts are different. Their thinking, their starting point and their thinking is really quite different. That's what this presentation said to me. It's quite a different way of approaching it to what we're doing. So it's just informative for us to know, because then as we get stakeholder feedback, we'll know which group they're in terms of how uncomfortable they are with having to apply the new concepts. And then following on from that, I thought, I wonder if we have any idea about how changing from a US GAAP model or a US GAAP-based model, how it actually affects the numbers, to what extent the actual numbers are very different. Because as I read this, I think, well, the concepts that are being used, they could give you very different numbers, but I don't know how different to our numbers. And I'd be interested to know if any of you have a feel for that. Because as I looked at it, I couldn't see what is the impact of the numbers doing it this way versus that way. So something that jumped out at me was discounting. Okay, so according to the slides, you know, there's not much discounting going on a particular item, whereas we are discounting, so that could have an effect. But then I thought, oh, it's much bigger than that. Because they start from a different conceptual place, the actual numbers could be very different. So I don't know if you've had any thoughts on that, how if you've started to think about effects analysis and how much change is in there for these people that are on IFRS 14.
Perhaps, but I would imagine that net income will not be all that difficult.
I think, yeah, the presentation is a big difference. In terms of the numbers, again, we don't have anything that we could give you in terms of quantifying, but our understanding is that a lot of the outcomes will end up being quite similar, partly because just the way the regulation works. So as part of the total allowed compensation, a very, very big part of that is the costs that have been incurred can then be built into the rate. If we're discounting using the regulated rate for discounting, which we expect to be the vast majority of cases, then we probably will end up with very, very similar numbers, whether you approach it from a cost deferral basis or a this is the compensation that's allowed and this is how we're measuring it. But I think you're very right to highlight that the mindset is quite different. So we will need to do a lot of communication and education work to try and shift it. So in those circumstances where there is going to be a different outcome, people are aware of where those differences are most likely.
And then also explaining why it's important, because if we think about the particular other project we've got where people say, you want us to do all that work and we still get a similar outcome. So we've learned from that we need to be clear why it is important that we change the model.
Yeah, it is. And actually on that point, just picking up, the nature of the regulation as well will have an impact for if it's still a very cost-plus type of regulation, then the mindset there is quite different from the regulation which is more incentive-based and more focused on the compensation.
Maru?
Thanks. I think I'll have to disagree with all these comments. We have to understand why we have this presentation and this comparison here. In my mind, we have this because we approved IFRS 14 a few years ago. And at that time, we agreed that at some point we would make a comparison with US GAAP because US GAAP is the only model that exists officially in terms of accounting. But actually, we have to be very careful why we are doing that, because not every country do adopt IFRS US GAAP model. I would say we can only assume only one country, US, or if we go further to Canada, and regulatory models that use this. So I suggest we be very careful in using this as an FX model, because we cannot assume that every country will have this. Will be very time-consuming to search for potential impacts of our proposal comparing to U.S. GAAP, and especially because we assume at that time that whoever adopt IFRS, and I'm saying that because I had a very stressful period in Brazil when they adopt IFRS, they stopped recognizing rights and obligations as a result of a regulatory agreement. So we have to assume that whoever use IFRS, and it's even the ones who are in the first, who were benefited by IFRS 14, whoever use IFRS, they do not have regulatory assets and liabilities. So how come are we going to assess the impact? This will take a significant amount of time. And this project is already running for quite some time. So I would not incentivize us to pursue any search to understand the ones who adopt US GAAP or not and how they are going to be impacted. We have to focus on the ones who adopt IFRS.
Ken Chow.
Thank you. My question may be also relevant to US unique rate regulation, but I will look at the issue in another way. From accounting perspective, it seems that the main difference between IFRS, our proposal model, and US GAAP is that US GAAP, they are primarily a cost deferral approach. That means that those companies apply this standard will only recognize regulated assets, not regulated liability. Very few cases, or maybe no regulatory liabilities, but for our cases, both sides. So what's why that? What's the reason? Is it the purely accounting differences, or there are differences among those different rate regulation mechanism? That means if those companies, they charge more in current period, they charge more to the customers. And on the U.S. rate regulation mechanism, normally they will not be, you know, required to detect the future rate to the customers. So that means they do not necessary to recognize the regulator obligation, regulatory liability at the current period. Oh, so I'm not sure whether the mechanism is different or simply because accounting is different.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I think throughout the presentation we were focusing more on some of the regulatory assets that would have been recognized, and it is more of a cost deferral method, so that would imply recognizing an asset. But there is provision within U.S. GAAP for these like balancing accounts where we overcollect relative to our estimated costs in the current period where we would record a regulatory liability. There's advanced billings against construction projects where we would also present that as a regulatory liability. And even specific situations where we're billing on the understanding that a rate order is going to be approved before it has been and that revenue may be subject to refund, that U.S. GAAP would also require the recognition of a regulatory liability. So I think from a principal's perspective, we'd end up recognizing similar amounts of regulatory liabilities and regulatory assets. I think more of the differences are on the regulatory asset side, and that's why the presentation is more highly focused on that side. But I don't know if that answers your question.
Yeah, because as you mentioned, that normally we say that those liabilities may be refund or advanced billing, those kind of, so I'm not sure what's the term, real term, in U.S. GAAP, they're using regulatory liability or something like that. But I think those liability, I think a little bit different from our liability. Our liability is that if I charge more to the customers, and in the future, the rate we charge to the customer will be reduced, not to the, here we said those refund or advising, advancing your billions. I think those obligations, I think, quite different. So in this regard, I just want to make sure whether different countries actually have different rate adjustment mechanism in place. And we assume that those rate regulation mechanism is the same. So then we require them to recognize all those time differences and whether it should be recognized assets or liability. If those regulations are not allow them to, you know, to recognize those liability, why we need to take to account for those time differences? This is the question I would like, you know, make sure, just make sure.
I think maybe if I can understand clearly your question, Ching Chao, I think the model that we've tried to do, because we've had the advantage of sort of sitting back and starting from scratch, and we have thought from the outset to try and capture many different types of regulations. So we went through the long exercise at looking at different types of regulation and trying to pick out the common threads. But by focusing, as we are doing, on the total allowed compensation rather than just the cost deferral aspects of it, we're trying to make sure that we cover all these different types of regulations. And the differences in the outcome will reflect the difference in what they're allowed to do through the regulations. So if the regulation is a pure cost plus, then yes, they will have different amounts to recognise than something that's more of an incentive base that might include a target profit or a bonus or something like that. But those differences will be reflecting differences in the economics. They're not just being driven by the accounting.
Gary.
Thank you for the presentation. It was really well done. I think for purposes of going forward, I don't know that the board needs to discuss these differences, you know, this week or next month or whatever. But I think it'd be important for outreach to have the backup notes anticipating some of these questions, like around the board. Now, will come up, just what's the issue, what's the response, and why. I mean, to me, the important thing in here is U.S. GAAP is, feel like, as best as I know, is the largest model used in the world in this space. So therefore, as I listen to the staff and think about it, although articulated differently on most items, we're going to get generally close to the same outcome. So I kind of look at this as a sort of proof of the concept we've developed it. Yes, it's articulated differently in terms of regulatory rights and obligations as opposed to cost deferrals. But regardless of how articulated, on most things, most of the time, you kind of get to the same debits and credits. We know where the differences are, FUDC, some discounting and so on in it. But nonetheless, the overall arching approach is the same. It's a focus on the regulatory unit of account. It's focused on the regulatory processes, what the regulators require you or permit you to do. In that sense, we're in exactly the same spot in terms of theory. I think, you know, the main U.S. standard was written in 1982, so that's almost 40 years ago, and it was written and released about the same time the U.S. is the early issues, the conceptual framework came out. We've got the advantage of having a modern conceptual framework and articulating it against current language that's professionally used in, you know, financial accounting and so on. And I think that's a plus. And it's moved the ball forward, but the debits and credits may not be in that much of a different place, just your logic is different. Yes, there'll be some differences. I think the important thing is on the sideline, the outreach teams are aware of what they are and have them available if needed.
Mary?
I wanted to pick up on something Gary said and then go back to Amaro's comments. I think Gary's right in terms of good for us when we, you know, looking forward to the day when we have a document to do outreach on, that we're aware of this and can speak to it rather than fumbling around. I think this is helpful. But to pick up on Amaro's point, I think we should not invest more time in exploring this or trying to get information about how many do this, how many do that, because there's also, I think, and the question of, especially as you get outside people who claim U.S. GAAP as their basis of reporting, you have to start making interpretations and judgments on the basis of reported financial statements about whether that's the appropriate interpretation, you know, of U.S. GAAP. So I think it's a rabbit hole that we may never come back from. And I think, as Amaro said, maybe not use this either at all or only very, very little in terms of effects analysis, because, again, that kind of bakes in some of those assumptions that I think it's not cost-effective to spend the time doing. So while I think this is a useful, you know, Gary, I think, used the phrase proof of concept, I'd say I'm glad we had it. I think it's helpful, but I wouldn't invest more in this at this point in time. Just have it more for communication perspective.
Okay. Thank you. Let's take a short break till half past.